Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks again for joining the Socialist Insight. Today we have a guest, a very special guest that has joined us in the past on the program, and is Stephen Durham. He was running as a presidential candidate in 2011 and 2012. And we are going to have him on the program today discussing why we need socialism today. Stephen, thanks again for joining the program.
Well, thank you, Stuart. Yes, I was a candidate in the 2012, just last fall.
Campaigning and in the election in 2012, right?
Yeah, 2012.
Stephen,
right.
What I'd like for you to do is just take probably around a minute, or so, just to introduce yourself, where you live, what it is that you do, and share a little bit about your background, and then we're going to get into our discussion today.
Yeah, well, I'm Stephen Durham, and I ran for president with Cristina Lopez on the Freedom Socialist Party 2012 ticket. We ran on the Freedom Socialist Party as a socialist feminist party. We're in five different cities, and we're socialist and feminist, and we're revolutionary socialists. We think socialism has to come about through a fundamental change in the relations between the two dominant classes, which is the working class and the capitalist class, and the ruling and the working class has to become the ruling class. So we're revolutionary socialists and we're feminists, and that means that we recognize the leadership role of women, and also the fact that feminism as an idea, equality for women, really unites the different movements, because women are a part of every sector that's discriminated against here in this country and actually throughout the world. And we're internationalists in that it's a global economy, and we're socialists. And I've been an activist since the 60s and in all the different movements. I was the only openly gay candidate to go to the ballot box in 2012. And I've been involved in organizing around police abuse in defending lesbians and gays. Also, I've worked for many years as a waiter in hotels and restaurants and defended immigrant workers. And that's a little bit of my background. I went to the University of California, Berkeley, graduated in 1970, was an anti-war activist, and have been an anti-war activist actually my whole life, not because I'm superior to other people or ahead of morally superior, but because the country's been at war for the last 50 years. So that's a little bit about me.
Right. Stephen, we're going to get into a few things that we're going to be discussing here. First, I want to start out with the tragedy that just took place in Connecticut. And of course, you see this on the news, and it's everywhere. As I mentioned, our program today is why we need socialism today. But in a socialist society, first I want to ask you, could anything have been done to prevent such a tragedy if we had had socialism in our government today?
Well, first of all, once you have socialism, you're not solving all social problems through violence.
Right.
I mean, that is endemic to this society. It's no wonder that a young man who's obviously troubled, obviously has huge problems. I don't know the origins of them all, but, you know, a young person, a young 20-year-old youth has huge problems. He lives in a society where violence is a solution to everything. I mean, war, police abuse, you know, the violence peddled in the media. It's a very violent culture, a very violent, you know, violence is proposed. You know, there's always a violent solution to social problems. I mean, that's what the police are about. I mean, here in New York City, in the past 6 months, five youths, all youths of color, have been murdered by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a socialist society, you wouldn't have that division between those people who are armed defending privilege against the majority of people who are unarmed and trying to struggle for survival. That's the bigger, I suppose that's the bigger picture.
Bigger
also,
picture.
Also, you'd have a world of abundance where you wouldn't have to be holding the majority of the people down through really a state and a system of organized violence that doesn't really represent the needs of people. I mean, in terms of what happened in Connecticut, I mean, obviously this young man had a huge number of mental problems, and of course I empathize with the parents that have lost their children and lost the future, and it's all very, very traumatizing and very terrible what people have to go through. However, for the past 30 years they've been cutting all mental health services. A parent who has a child who has the kind of psychological orientation as a young man had to have, you know, had to have in order to carry out a massacre like this, even a parent who has a child like that. I mean, I worked with the most disturbed children for two years in Vermont, and I saw that the damage that can happen to children from communities and families and schools, not being able to deal with individuals with problems. And for the past 30 years, they've been cutting all the services from mental health. And also, I want to make another point, is that what they've also done, because of big pharmaceutical companies, they're taking children with emotional problems and just putting them on drugs. They were doing it 30 years ago, and they're doing it more so now than ever. Rather than dealing with behavioral problems through human contact and therapy that talks about the problems and the feelings and the anxieties of children, they're just administering drugs to them. And that's part of the profit motive of drug-oriented culture.
Well, one of the things I see also is when people have mental problems, or, first of all, we don't have the resources, our public resources, or resources even to deal with people that need that type of assistance. We don't have that. And I see under the system we have, especially what you can see here in California and many other states, when there is a problem, they wait until it becomes a crisis, such as this crisis that happened there in Connecticut, but sometimes it's not quite that severe. They send them off to prison, and then prison has nothing to do with rehabilitation, and then they put them out on the street, usually on a 3 strikes, and they go back. I have a nephew that has been in prison for over 20 years, and he just went back in. He has mental problems, but they are doing nothing to treat him for his mental illness, and he's had that ever since he was diagnosed as having mental problems when he was preteens. But here he has spent over 20 years of his life because we have a system that fails to deal with that. So what I see as far as myself, on a capitalist system, they, instead of dealing with the problems that we have, they deal with many of the symptoms. And, of course, unfortunately, in this situation, the symptom dealt a real tragedy. But then we had the same thing that just happened just recently. I believe it was last week in Oregon.
Right, and it's a young person also.
Right, exactly.
Young person.
But then we have the situation where I see many times young kids are looking at on their cell phones and they're playing these games. And, I mean, we live in a very violent society. Are we taking the wrong approach as far as what our freedoms are? And, of course, we're going to get into the Second Amendment rights in just a few seconds. But, we want people to be educated, but a society that proliferates from violence, are we going in a direction, is this something that would be permitted or something that should be any type of restraints that would be under a socialist society, if you had socialist leadership?
Well, if you had a socialist society, which would be a society, socialism is an economic and political system whose main purpose is to meet the human needs of all.
Right.
And if you mean the human needs of people, people I don't think are fundamentally violent. You know, people are basically fundamentally nonviolent or and cooperative. That's how they create all the wealth, because we go to a work, you know, the majority of people go to work every day, are extremely disciplined, extremely extremely motivated, you know, devote their whole lives to trying to make ends meet. And so, you know, that's where I diverge as a socialist from religion. It's not human nature that's the problem. I mean, obviously, a person that can go into a shopping mall, into a school, and just murder people has reached the end of, and shoot people, has reached some kind of total crisis in their own orientation, and they are the exception, not the rule. But in a socialist society, you wouldn't have a state, actually, that doesn't represent your interest in your interest. You'd have a state that does represent your interest, that would be interested in providing all the human needs that the human beings have, and that would include the kind of dealing with trauma that happens, or even mental illness that has to do with physiological and maybe even genetic inheritance. Right away, children would be treated like Native Americans, raise their children, actually in some of the cultures today even, but even before the conquest. I mean, every child was given a job on the basis of parents really looking at Native Americans and saying, this child can do this and this child can do that, a very humanistic kind of approach. And that the terrible things that happen, you know, in people's lives this whole society would be about solving those problems and having the resources to be able to do that. Because the idea of socialism is that we have arrived at a place of technological development and capacity to provide food, clothing, housing, and I would say mental services and physical education and parks and yoga for everybody, if that's what they want to do, to meet human needs on an unprecedented level. And that's the problem, is that capitalism isn't doing that now. And
well,
so,
one other thing I'd like to point out is I think about you and I both, we're from the 60s, especially when we went to college, high school and college. And what I would see years ago, I went to Dominguez State University, but you would see many students when they would be even at work, they would be working probably part-time and on their breaks or whatever. Of course, they had books then that you actually had to, you know, thumb through the pages, but they would be doing homework and, you know, for learning. And now many individuals can't even afford an education. So subsequently, as I mentioned, you can go in the work site instead of it's something that people, they seek to be educated. They enjoy receiving education. But when you have that gap where that void is not being filled, now people have games that they be looking at, and you see it all the time. They're walking around with their various phones and applications where they can, as I mentioned, it's just a society that is just a proliferation of violence. But
I think the whole issue of guns and the whole issue of violence can't be separated from the war. And the war culture and the war economy. You know, everybody, even people talking about gun control, no one is talking about the fact that the United States exports 73% of the arms produces and exports 70% of the arms around the world. And no one talks about the economic aspects of violence. You know, that the gun lobby, they make it sound like the NRA is just people who want to have guns. But they don't go the other step and talk about how there's a real economic motive and huge profits in guns.
Right, and we place this country right here is placing guns in the hands of people in every continent around the world, and very often then we just see the violence on television.
And it's drones now. I mean, how can you separate what's happened in a school? If you truly are a human being, you know, and you have a human approach, you really can't separate. And any kind and a certain amount of consciousness, you can't separate the violence that happened in Newton, Connecticut at Sandy Hook School, which is a terrible tragedy. You can't separate that from the violence of drones murdering
right.
children.
Oh, yeah.
Or the violence the number of children that just died in the Gaza Strip. It's, you know, you just can't separate. And the greatest purveyor of violence in the world is the U.S. military-industrial complex. Let's keep, we have to keep a perspective here. That, you know, the horror is the horror and the trauma is the trauma, but the degree of state violence is nothing compared to individual violence, and that's not diminishing what happened or diminishing the horror and the pain of the parents who lost children, but you know, there is a bigger picture. We have to keep
that
clear.
That is a good point that you brought up, where you mentioned about the drones, because we're talking about gun control. What about drone control?
Exactly.
I mean, here you have, they're saying that for every targeted individual for a drone, there's 12 to 1 of innocent civilians that are being killed.
Right.
12 to 1. But then they say, but, you know, it was for a defensive purpose or whatever. But 12 to 1, what about the innocent people, the children, and like this? And this is something that, unfortunately, we see what happened there in Connecticut all over television. But people are not seeing what is happening in other countries, such as Yemen, and what is happening in Pakistan. They're not seeing this is happening every day.
Right.
So, and I wanted to, you know, that brings us to another area that I wanted to just deal with just for a few moments here. It's about the debate now that has come up in Capitol Hill in regards to gun control. And obviously, you know, this is something that's going to be hotly debated, especially for the next few weeks or what, a few months. I don't know to what end that it will lead to, but when we talk about the Second Amendment, obviously the founding fathers, the writers of the Constitution, and the various amendments, they weren't thinking about things that, you know, what we see happening there in Connecticut. But what is your opinion about the limitations and what freedoms should be, any type of restrictions or limits should be on the Second Amendment for people and gun controls?
Well, let's start with the Bill of Rights. You know, the Bill of Rights wasn't really formulated by, I mean, you refer to the Founding Fathers. It was actually the Founding Fathers tried to cram a Constitution down the throat of the American people. And since they had just been through a war, which was the first war to take place, that was a mobilization of imperialist troops in the New World. It was the French and Indian War that preceded the American Revolution, and actually the British won, and that's how Washington became so well known. I mean, the whole American Revolution itself happened out of a war, and in that war, the people had housed, you know, soldiers, and they had carried guns, and so when the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution, they wanted to just cram it through, and the people rose up in rebellion and said, no, we want these rights.
Right.
And one of the rights was to carry guns, because they said the government can be oppressive. So that's how the Second Amendment came up. And actually, that piece of the Constitution, we're not for changing. You know, we've said in the Freedom Socialist Party is that the problem, if you have a ban on guns, you're just going to have criminals, and you're going to have the police armed to the teeth, and you're going to have the criminals armed. It's really not going to solve the problem. I think that gun control is once again put forward as a solution to the problem of violence. But how can that be a solution when the people who legitimately have guns in the name of the state are more violent than ever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the police are more out of control here in New York City and across the country with the police abuse. Arizona, and I was in Los Angeles in the 80s. Nothing's gotten better. It's only gotten worse. The police are more out of control than ever. And then you're going to call for gun control without any kind of corresponding control of the police. It's very much what Michael Bloomberg and the liberals, you know, who think that we can somehow solve the problem of violence with gun control, that's going to solve the problem. So,
well, that is a problem, what you were saying, because you're talking about gun control for citizens throughout the country, and then you have the police department. They're arming themselves to the teeth.
And the state is more armed than ever. You know,
yeah,
the
they
state
are.
Is more armed than ever, and they're the attack on our civil liberties is greater than ever. And I mean, ultimately the mass of people are going to have to make a change. And if they're, you know, people have a right. You know, I think I go back to what Malcolm X said, and this is our position, is that we don't support individual violence, you know, individual people just doing what the young man, you know, the horror that the young man created in Newton, or even the individual terrorism of the bombing of the World Trade Center. It's totally unproductive. But we do, as socialists, the Freedom Socialist Party does say that people have a right to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it doesn't matter who's shooting you, if you have a right to self-defense, that's a fundamental right that we have. And with that, we say, gun control is not the solution. The solution is something much more fundamental in changing the system. If they were willing to take the total profit out of guns, if they were willing to dismantle the Pentagon, maybe we could talk about gun control.
Right.
If they were willing, if the system was willing to really, you know, do something about police abuse and empower some citizens to really make it, empower citizens and mothers of police. Police murder children who've been murdered by the police. If they allowed them to have some power, maybe we could talk about controlling guns. But in the present situation, it's just a matter it's just disarming all of. It's making us so we really can't defend ourselves, and we have a right to defend ourselves.
And unfortunately, what I see is it's a situation that will work against, you know, citizens throughout the country. It'll work against all working people, because the legislation, whatever they come up with, will be talking about how they can disarm people in their homes. And then, as you mentioned, the police departments and the ones that are wreaking havoc across the country and shooting many innocent civilians.
Yes, mostly people of color.
We're not even dealing with that.
Yeah, they don't even know. That's a problem. Right. That's right. Exactly. Another thing that the ultra conservatives are saying on the radio now is that we should have armed people in all the churches and armed guards in all the schools. So once again, they use an incident like this to create more repression, just like they did with the attack on the World Trade Center.
Right.
And that is a tragedy in terms of civil liberties. Of the situation of this kind of a development, but it really comes from a system that is really totally outlived its rationality and its usefulness, and that
very interesting that you bring that up about what happened on 9/11 and how we as citizens and people living in this country, how we have so willfully given up so many of our rights. I mean, when we talk about the Patriot Act and we talk about the National Defense Authorization Act, how we have, as people, they say it's okay because it's giving us more security as a nation. But what it's doing, we're sacrificing our freedoms. And the same thing what they'll be discussing with these talks about gun controls. Again, it's taking a little bit away from our freedoms as working people in this country. But why don't you have the last word on that, Stephen? Then what we're going to do is I'm going to just have you to reintroduce yourself, and then we're going to talk about this, what we've been hearing over the news over the last few weeks about this fiscal cliff and the ramifications of that. Why don't you just have the last word on any gun control, on gun control laws, and then we're going to, I'd like for you to reintroduce yourself, Stephen. Thank you.
Well, you know, I think people have the right to self-defense, and like I said in the very, like I said in the beginning, that if you ban all guns, then you have just the criminals and the government with guns.
Right.
And of course, you know, violence itself is not the solution. I'm not saying that, but you do have a right to self-defense, and
mm-hmm.
and not so much self-defense from the criminals, although that's a part of it, and that's where they diverge from the right wing. You know, they're talking about self-defense from criminals, and they have a stereotypical view of criminals being immigrants and people of color and the poor, mm-hmm. and they have to defend themselves from the majority of society. But as a leftist and as a socialist, we say that, you know, the working class has a right to defend itself against a state that can move against it in a huge way, and have a right to defend their interests, their class interests as working people, when they're under attack. And that if you undermine the right of self-defense, you undermine the right of people to struggle. Because that's essentially
right, exactly.
what people are doing, is they're struggling to make it in a system that's continuing to deteriorate. And I just wanted to give out our website, because I'm Stephen Durham, and I ran with Cristina Lopez, and I'm for President of the United States. She was the vice presidential candidate on the Freedom Socialist Party ticket, and our website is socialism.com. Very simple. You can go to our website and check it out, socialism.com. And we're a socialist feminist, we're a revolutionary socialist feminist party, and we believe that you really have to replace capitalism with socialism, and socialism is a economic and political system whose purpose is to meet the human needs of all. We believe that that's possible, and in order to really have socialism, you have to have an element of workers' democracy.
And thank you very much. Stephen, as I mentioned, we wanted to get into this part of this discussion about the fiscal cliff. That's all you hear when you turn on late night television. You hear it, just a blurb on it during the evening news, and you see it in the newspapers. First of all, what is the fiscal cliff?
Well, you know, I like to call it the fiscal blackmail. And it's also, you know, and I hope that with this fiscal cliff, it can push some people over it. And I hope I think that should be the Democrat and the Republican politicians in Congress that actually set this whole damn thing up. They
mm-hmm.
set it up. They set it up with Obama at the front, you know, because they say that there's a deficit crisis. It's not a deficit.
Right.
We have to be very careful. You know, we're living under a system that is working overtime to reproduce itself. That's what it wants to do. That's what it's working to do. That's what the ruling class is doing, you know, through fear and violence and coercion. And the media, you know, so they come up with this idea of the deficit crisis, and it's a poverty crisis. It's not a deficit
right.
crisis. It's a poverty crisis. We can't just, you know, it's very easy to fall into using their terminology. It's not even austerity.
Right.
You know, Krugman in the New York Times, who's a liberal and talking about providing more money to people and does a lot of talking, a lot of writing, good writing about how the deficit is not really a problem. He's, you know, he comes up with the term the austerity crisis. It's not an austerity crisis. It's a poverty crisis.
Right.
It's a poverty crisis. It's the number of children that are going to live off of food stamps. The 90% of black children will be on food stamps at one time or another in their lives. I mean, it's a poverty crisis, and the fiscal cliff actually came together as a bipartisan thing supported by Obama, where he brought Simpson, I believe, and Bowles.
Simpson-Bowles.
Simpson-Bowles together, and they came up with a whole, and it was bipartisan, it was Republicans and Democrats, and they came up with a whole number of things that had to happen before December 31st of this year. Otherwise, there would be mandatory cuts in social services and in entitlements and other things. And so that's what they came up with, this term of the fiscal cliff. And
is this more of a warning to working people that austerity measures are on the way, or is it something that's going to impact the Wall Street, the big corporations on Wall Street and the banks? What is it going to affect? Is it going to affect everyone, or is it obviously is something that has been put in place by the Democrats and Republicans at the end, as you mentioned, at the end of 2011? They say if we can't bring this under control, then at the end of 2012, we're just going to make certain that's going to be the cliff. Everything is going to change. But who is it really going to affect?
It's going to affect. It's one more effort. It's one more effort to make the majority pay for the economic crisis that was created by Wall Street. That's what it really is. You know,
right.
they could actually cancel the debt. You know, they could just cancel the debt. And things would go right on, you know, they could cancel the debt and people would still, I mean, even if they cancel the debt, we'd still have a huge division between the rich and the poor. You know, it's just the debt's mostly on paper to begin with.
Right, it is.
And they're using it as a way to drive down the wages and the living conditions of the working class. I mean, it's happening already. It's already happening. You know, the working class is in a worse position every day with food, with inflation for food at 7%, which is one of the main ways that workers lose economic power is through food prices going up. And they say there's no inflation, but as I said, 7%. We're paying 7% more in food. It's going up at an enormous rate. Every time you go in the market, it's more expensive. Everything you spend on food, you can't spend on rent, you can't spend on health care, you can't spend on education. And so it's right. They're really trying to make us pay. This is a real, that's why I call it the deficit blackmail.
Oh, blackmail.
Yeah, it's a blackmail. They're trying to blackmail us into us accepting the fact, you know, to take it for us to pay for the economic crisis we didn't create. And then the other thing I think that's very interesting about it is that, you know, with the election, in order to get elected, right, Obama had to say, in order to get elected, Obama, you know, took out a little book and, you know, started doing some populist rhetoric, which was tax the rich.
Right.
Which, you know, what's going to happen is, and I don't know that people are really aware of this, is, and there is some element, there are people organizing to stop the entitlement cuts, but Obama's basically, I predict Obama is going to get a little bit more out of the super wealthy, but his trade-off is going to be cutting entitlements. And I also read that for every dollar he gets from higher taxes from the wealthy, he's going to cut $3 in entitlements. That is going to be the trade-off. And that, who pays for that? Who pays for that is the poorest and the most needy.
Well, one other thing that people need to be aware of, because as you mentioned, all of this is right in the hands and in the control of Congress. They set these lines of demarcation of saying that this is where the cliff is, and once you go over the cliff, it's all over. But, you know, Congress, they're the ones that they're in control of this. And it's something, as you mentioned, they could cancel the debt. They can say, well, it's not a cliff. These are things we need to do to be able to ease this. But mainly, I mean, it's paper money. But another thing that you hear now within every 6 months to a year is you hear about raising the debt ceiling. I mean, what is that all about?
Well, I mean, you know.
Because myself personally, Stephen, I'm opposed to continuously raising the debt ceiling. What it's doing is just creating more future debt. In other words, okay, we have more money on our credit card, and they have already projecting within the next 5 years the debt will be over $22 trillion. I'm saying it's going to be far beyond $22 trillion, and they're going to still be spending like crazy and telling the working people that, well, you got to pay for all this massive debt that we're creating. But what is your opinion on that?
Well, I think you really have to think outside of the system. I mean, the debt is completely on paper. And,
right.
You know, and actually I think it's also the whole debt rhetoric, you know, that's coming from the ruling class in this country wants us to think about the government as if it were like our household finances. Once again, we're blackmailed with household finances too, aren't we?
Yes.
I mean, you know that it's a blackmail there also. You know, we have certain needs, and they've driven down our wages for 30 years, and now there's the economic crisis because the people couldn't pay the interest on their debt, so on the debt that they have for trying to meet their needs. And so I think it's very important not to think in terms of how they're defining it as debt being a problem. That's not
right.
That isn't the problem. The problem is that people don't have what they need, and we need to guarantee that they can. And I just think we have to really try to define things more on our terms. I mean, in terms of I don't know where increasing the debt. They increase the debt, you know, so high because they're trying to go to war, you know.
Right.
And they won't stop going to war. You know, they won't stop going to war. And they're never going to stop going to war. So if they have to increase the debt in order to provide entitlements for people, we need to just fight for entitlements. And that's my opinion. And not being worried about the debt, which is on paper. And it's debt on their terms, not on our terms. I mean, that's so
right.
Important. Otherwise you get all wrapped up in, oh my God, you know, the system's really shaky. Yes, their system is very shaky, and we want it to come
down. It's falling apart.
We want it, but it's falling apart, and we want it to come down. And it will only come down when people in this country, through its shaking, you know, it's shaking. It is shaking. It is. It's pulling people in many different directions. I think in the campaign, you know, when we raised our platform, the platform of the Freedom Socialist Party, I'm sure you found the same thing true with the Socialist Party. People were interested in what we had to say.
Oh, they were, you know, very interested.
And it's shaking, and it's through that shaking that they will learn the lessons that, who cares about their debt? You know, we could cancel the debt. We could cancel the debt in this country, and we could cancel. We could say we're refusing to pay, you know,
exactly.
the debt to the Chinese. And wouldn't that strengthen the Chinese working class in its own country that's facing, you know, a regime that's trying to exploit the hell out of them too? I mean, just the thing of saying we are no longer going to go to war to the world. Wouldn't that send a huge message to the Egyptian people that were in the streets yesterday, fighting so hard against they died in the thousands in Tahrir Square, and now they have a government that's refusing to represent them and is the most oppressed, that are rising up in Syria against Assad. I mean, you know, the world's in rebellion, and I just think that's my point. I think we've got to be very careful about, we're not concerned about their debt. Our concern is about how is our class, and how are we going to survive. And I say, cancel mm-hmm. the debt. They do it for banks. You know, it's called haircutting.
Right.
They do it for banks. They get to a certain point. But, you know, they won't do it for us ever, because that would empower us. And the ideology of keeping us down, we don't know. We can't do it. We depend on them. I'm talking about the capitalists and all the people that support the capitalism.
Yeah, they cancel their debt, and then they put tens of billions of dollars into their account. In other words, we're going to give you a little bit of bailout money here.
Well, that's what's happening now.
While we're at it.
You know, when I go to the Chase Bank now and I mm-hmm. take out money, I get brand new money, and that's brand new. I think that that's a product of the quantitative easing. I mean, it's $63 billion a month. They're just printing money. And
right.
That's canceling debt. That's mm-hmm. that's the government. That's us. The government. You know, they're taking on the toxic debt of Wall Street, rather than saying, well, you lost, so you know,
that was a good point that you brought up in regards to where you, what you're mentioning about during the election when you were campaigning and also when I was campaigning, how many people, there were just so many people that were open to listening and also supported the ideas of what we were talking about. I was just looking at I think it was a Gallup poll just recently came out, and they said over 50, I think it was like 53% of Democrats thought that, you know, they were open to socialism. 53%, it was like 26% of Republicans. And here I live in a very predominantly conservative community, and I was surprised when I would share my campaign with many people. They were very supportive, and they said, "Well, I'm going to still vote for you. I'm just going to try to ignore the fact that you're a socialist, but I like what you're talking about." I mean, these are people that are Republicans and conservatives. So, but people are open. And also, I was reading about, it was some poll that was done, this was some time earlier during the campaign, where they say 34% of people in this country are open to socialist ideas, 34%. So that's a huge increase. I mean, we can see that the shift is changing. The only suppression that is happening right out of Washington, D.C. As you mentioned, their system is crashing. Mm-hmm. Their system is crashing. They know it's not working. Now the only way they can do is they need to try to preserve it only by deception.
Right, and it is really a question of socialism or barbarism, as socialism or the destruction of the planet. I mean, you know, that the idea of socialism or barbarism came about after the rise of Hitler in Germany. You know, that's when socialists started talking about socialism or barbarism, because Nazi, you know, the fascist Germany, Hitlerism was a sign of barbarism. You know, they
mm-hmm.
where it was barbarism, not only in the murder of you know, political radicals and gypsies and Jews and nonconformists of all kinds, you know, but it was barbarism in the sense that every single gain made by the working class was reversed, and they turned a profit larger than they'd been able to turn previously. And you know how they did it? They did it by making it impossible. I just read about this, making it impossible for workers to leave their jobs. Because if workers could leave their jobs, if they could leave their job for a better wage, that would actually cut into the profits and actually put more hands in the more money in the hands of the working class in Germany. But that's where that was really the proof that German fascism or barbarism was, that they'll go to barbarism to maintain capitalism, and that's making it illegal. It's turning every factory into a prison complex, and that's what they did. It really is a question of fascism mm-hmm. or socialism. I mean,
and you see the same thing here in this country. I mean, even in the workplace. I mean, people are afraid to lose their jobs because they say, if I lose this job, I don't have nowhere else to go. And they're working for meager wages. They can't pay their bills. They can't feed their children. And here people are working for less than $1,500 a month. And of course, in California, you can't survive on that. And probably in most other parts of the country.
And I just want to say one thing. Yeah, it is percolating, and people voted for, you know, for the Freedom Socialist Party ticket. Yes, and it was very important. We're out there as socialists. But I want to just comment on one thing that you said, is that it is the same. People vote because we're providing concrete solutions. Like I was in the newspaper here, and the day before the elections, I was in the newspaper called AM New York here in New York City, which has it's a throwaway newspaper that they pass out at the subway stops. It's a kind of a new phenomenon, and it has a larger circulation in New York Times. And I said, well, public transportation should be free because public transportation is used to go to work and to shop, and if we don't work or don't shop, the whole system falls apart. So paying for the subway is just a tax, another tax.
Right.
That on us. And, you know, people like those ideas. And that's the purpose. That's what we were trying to do in the campaign, is to get people to think outside the box, you know, to think about something new in to defend themselves against the system that's really, you know, tearing apart so much of what's been gained by the working class.
Well, here are some of the things that we were talking about during the campaign, and of course, your message was basically the same as mine. When people were saying, well, where are you going to come up with money where you can be able to offer free education? Where are you going to come up with money for health care and like that? And I was saying, when it came to health care, you know, we need to have a single payer. When I was talking about education, well, look, we're spending almost $700 billion for the military-industrial complex. We need to use that money instead of going for more wars. We need to be using that money to educate people. Educate people that are interested in being educated and not to burden them with debt. So people, what they were during the campaign and even now, what we were doing as candidates and what we do as socialists, we give people some very good ideas, practical ideas of how problems that are complex, how they can be solved. What we see on a capitalist system, they're not really looking for real solutions, because the real solutions will cut back on the profits that are going to big corporations and to big banks, and it doesn't work for them.
Yes, and even in this economic crisis, the capacity for production in this country is either at 60 or 70% of what it could be, because they cut
right.
back, they shut the doors when the profits aren't there. And so you could actually produce, if you had a rational economy in the country, just with the technology we have now, you could produce so much more, you know, so much
exactly.
more, even with less labor. You know, you could produce so much more, but since they're driven by the profit motive, they actually shut down the production, the capacity to produce. That's what happens during a recession. We could actually provide more for, they could actually produce more, but since the logic is that they'll only produce if they get profit, you know, an exploitation of workers, that that they shut down the whole machinery is slowed down, is turned off in order to maintain the class relations that we have, that they depend upon. The other thing, what happened at in Michigan, you know, a couple of days with that legislation,
right? The right
capitalism
to work.
Is so invested in pitting workers against each other. And
gentlemen,
that,
we have a caller here. 775, hello.
Oh, hello?
Hello, you're
hello?
On.
Hello?
Oh, hi. Is Stu on there too?
Stuart and Stephen Durham, he's our guest today. You have a question for Stephen?
Oh, no, I my friend Stu Webb had let me know about the show,
I'm back on hold. He'll be on in about 15 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks.
No problem. Okay, sorry.
Now, what were you saying, Stephen?
I mean that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought.
Well, anyway, I'm going to take you, because we have just a few more minutes. I want to cover a few things,
yes,
Stephen.
Sir.
I say, why do we need socialism? One of the things you and I went through a grueling election. By the way, how did you do as far as, you had a write-in campaign throughout the country.
Yes.
How did you do?
Well, we're having a very hard time.
You were all over the place.
Well, yeah, we're having a very hard time getting the results. Like in the state of Washington, they won't even count them. So we went to
How many states did you achieve write-in status?
24.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and you know, I know that people voted for me in Westchester County, but you know, here in New York City, near New York State, and they did. There's no votes recorded. And then we went to vote, and Stuart, you know, it just was incredible. It was less than an inch by an inch to write two names with no lines. I mean, it is so, and so we got many more votes than we received than are recorded, but the campaign wasn't about just getting votes, you know.
Right.
And other people,
it's about getting a message.
It's about getting
the
message out, and I really appreciate everybody who voted for me. You know, it's really important that people did. What was really exciting was people who had said, oh, I'm so happy to vote for you. It was such a liberating experience on a personal level to really vote for something that I wanted rather than not vote or vote for something that I didn't want. So, yeah, so
Stephen,
we'll never
why
we'll
do
never
we need
know
electoral
how many votes I got.
why do we need electoral reform? Because obviously what is happening under the current system is not working, especially for third parties and third-party candidates. Why is it so imperative that we have electoral reform in this country?
Well,
and how it would work under socialism?
Well, under socialism, you'd have people under, well, electoral, you know, it's their elections, not our elections, you know. It's
right.
Their system. It's a
good
rigged
point.
System.
Very good point.
And I think maybe the system perhaps was less rigged at the very beginning because Marx was so excited in the 19th century with universal suffrage. That was something the working class won.
Mm-hmm.
And Marx talks about
right.
how, and Engels was very excited about it too. He says the voting patterns of people voting can actually, you know, register a protest against the system and really show where the working class really is. Now today, it's been so, we're so far away from that. It's been so manipulated and so rigged in this country, especially here in the U.S. and other countries too, but here in the U.S. especially, it's been so rigged that it's really hard to register the protest in the electoral arena. Although it's extremely important, but that's why we need ballot. That's why we need reform. Have a unified regulations for federal elections. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. They do it when it comes to the financing, but they won't do it when it comes to qualifying as a candidate. And you know, that's all tied. That's all tied to the terrible reactionary, you know, system in this country of states' rights, which you know was what the South was so imbued with in order to be able to create the Jim Crow system. And now it's states'
rights.
Well,
where do we start with reform, Stephen?
Well,
in your opinion,
I think we have to start talking about. We have to start talking about it for federal elections, a unified system of qualifications. We have got to empower third parties to be able to register, be able to get on the ballot, make it easier to get on the ballot. We have to change the way vote is counted, so that people
mm-hmm.
can have instant vote and then vote for as many candidates as they want. And then have the candidate that gets the most votes be the one that wins. We need proportional
mm-hmm.
representation, which means that if you get a certain number of votes, you're guaranteed some kind of representation in legislative bodies.
Right.
And we need to take the money out of politics. I mean, this was the most bought and sold election ever in human history. $6 billion.
Right.
And
all the campaigns, just two campaigns alone was $2 billion. All the campaigns nationwide, people don't understand that, as you mentioned, it was $6 billion, not to mention all the free publicity came through the airwaves that the two corporate parties didn't even have to pay for.
Yes, and then the media, you know, makes millions of dollars off of these campaigns, too. So
exactly.
That perpetuates the status quo.
Two areas I want to get into, because obviously, you know, capitalism is not working for no one except for the super rich. And right now we have well over 23 million people in this country that are unemployed. I found it very interesting every time that Romney would say, well, under Obama's administration, we have 23 million people that are unemployed. And then Obama will come back and say, well, first of all, I'd like to correct him. It's only 12. Well, that was about the only thing that Romney got right during the campaign. It was more than 23 million people. But what should be done as far as, well, we need to have reform to put people back to work? Because as I mentioned, capitalism is not working. It's not working for employment, creating jobs, and it's not working for health care. Because presently we have still under Obamacare, a system that is not working. We have 47 million people, while it's still in the courts and everything, 47 million people in this country that are without health care. Where do we go? Because we need to change the conversation, because what the Democrats and Republicans are talking about is not working. What do we need to say different?
Well, we need to approach approach a total revamping of how money is spent. I mean, in the campaign that I ran on, you know, we call for dismantling the Pentagon and putting it into a jobs training and jobs training and employment program, you know, at union wages. You know, that's you know, the money, you know, the money is there. It's just in the completely the wrong places. I mean, we create all the wealth. You know, so we need full employment. We need to reduce the work week to 30 hours with no cut in pay, and that would create 25 million more jobs. You know, 25% more jobs, which would solve unemployment. We need to call for full employment. You know, we need to call for it. You know, we need to have a minimum wage. I mean, here in New York City, and also in over the Thanksgiving holidays, the whole emergence just since the election of fighting of low-wage workers, you know, organizing and picketing and even walking off the job here in New York City. They did it in McDonald's for the first time. There's a whole move of low-wage workers. And actually we had a rally here in New York City where the building trades came out and supported them. That was unprecedented. And the building trades are very conservative, but they were talking about they want union jobs, but they were also identifying with the low-wage workers that are, you know, works for $7.25 an hour. We need to call for a minimum wage. In the campaign, we called for a 20-hour minimum wage. That's only $35,000 a year. That's not that much money. People are now talking about $13 and $14. I mean, the federal minimum wage is $7 and change. So All those things, you know, we have to call for full employment. We need full employment. However, the capitalists need unemployment. It's called the Reserve Army of Labor. That's how they pit everybody against each other for a job. And I just want to say one thing, and this is what the point I wanted to make, is that, you know, we're all for justice, and we're all against injustice, but there's a material interest in keeping us pitted against each other. And, you know, It's really a material interest of capitalism. Capitalism has to pit workers, they put workers in competition among themselves for jobs, and that's exactly where they keep the Reserve Army of Labor alive, is because that drives down wages. And if they can't do it within a country, they bring in workers and they super exploit them like they do the immigrants. It's a race. It'll be the race to the bottom until we really have a globalized perspective. In the campaign, we called for opening the borders because workers have the right to achieve, to strive for the highest wages wherever they are in the whole world.
Well, Steve, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the program again, and I'm looking forward to having you back on in the future. What I would like for you to do is take just a few moments just to let our listeners know how they can reach you, and whether it's by phone or email or Facebook. Could you share that with our listeners?
Yes, yes, I'm on. You can get in touch with me if you've liked what I've said or want to ask any questions or give me your comments. I'm with the Freedom Socialist Party, and our website is socialism.com. It's very simple, socialism.com. And you're welcome to email me if you want to. My email address is S as in Sam, G as in good, D as in David, 551947@gmail.com. So, but you can always contact me through the website, socialism.com. And thanks again, Stuart. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks again. I look forward to having you back on. And again, we'd like to thank Ruth Ann for making this time available for us to come and share some information with our listeners from week to week. We will not be on for the next 2 weeks during the holidays, so we'll be seeing you 3 weeks from now. And we had to reschedule a program. We have Stephanie Kolinsky. She is the chairperson with the Socialist Party USA. She will be on with us 3 weeks from now. We look forward to having her join us, and also having you to join us 3 weeks from now. And in the meantime, have a very safe time during the holidays on the highways and also with your friends and relatives. Thanks again for joining the Socialist Insight.
Good evening, everyone. Okay, we're on the Liahona Times, and that's on the international timetable. This is the apprentice, Aleph Tau, Vin Dizel. I'm on tonight. Our guest arrived. We're expecting to have Stu Webb, and there's been almost endless discussion this weekend about the events that happened in Connecticut in the schoolyard, you know, massacre, and all sorts of speculation. The part of our investigation on the weekend is what else is going on, and we invite you to call in. In other words, what other items do we miss, because this dominated all news discussions over the weekend. And of course, they're now calling for tighter gun control lobby.
We do have a caller, 775. Hello again.
Hello.
Oh, hello, ma'am. I just wanted to let everybody know, my name is PJ Halfridge. I'm a good friend of Stu Webb's, and Stu had encouraged me to call in when he was going to be on, because we've been working together on a lot of getting the word out about what's really behind these school shootings and what's going on in this country and the shadow government that's kind of slowly trying to take our guns away so that they can move to the next New World Order kind of
scheme. I'm with you. I believe that Stu is on now. 816?
Oh, yeah, that's Stu.
Hello,
I know
Stu.
It by heart.
There you go.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Hello, Stu.
How you doing, Benny?
I'm doing good. Sorry to wake you up this morning. I saw the information that a friend of ours that is very active in the Gulf Coast investigations. Stu, before we get into the discussion, I wanted to let you give out your contact, your website. And I'm invite people to call in and listen. And if they, Ruth Ann, you're welcome to, let them know that, if they call, what area code they're from, just let them know that, if they're just calling in to listen.
I can tell the difference if they're calling in. Press one.
I could just tell that you just, it sounds like PJ was doing a call, and you must have made an announcement about this show.
Yeah.
Benny?
Right, I posted the,
are you there?
I posted the link on your walls, too. Hope you don't mind.
Oh, no, that's not a problem.
I shared it, too, on mine.
That's
as far
good.
As
and
the
don't
contact information.
Don't forget that this is archived, and you can send it out afterwards. We have a caller from 719. Hello?
Hey, it's Lisa.
Oh, Lisa's in. Okay.
Excellent. You're on with Stu Webb.
Hey, Stu. How are you doing?
And PJ.
I'm good, Lisa. How are you?
It's
hey,
good
Lisa.
To hear
how you
your
doing?
Voice again. Hey there, guys. How you doing?
Hanging in there.
Got a lot to talk about.
That's for sure.
Is this a call-in line? Is this what this is, or is this a radio program?
It's a radio program.
Right,
you're on the air.
Radio, it's a podcast.
We're live, Stu.
Vinny, why don't you go ahead and take control?
Lisa, did you have a question or something? Are these
some
of your listeners, or...?
Vince invited me. I've been on the show before, and Vince let me know that you were going to be on the show, and he invited me to participate.
Okay. Okay.
So
where do you want to start here, with the current events or what?
Well, let's start with your website, because I just remember StuWebb.com.
StuWebb.com, and that's where the breaking news page is. You can find all the breaking news right there. You scroll down about a foot, and you go by date, and I've got all the information in there. And then, of course, I have some archives. Starting in 2004, I quit archiving because it got so intense that I couldn't keep up with it all, with what we were posting and the information we're bringing. So all you can do is just keep going backwards into the breaking news pages and go to the bottom of the page and keep working back, and you can find tons of information. But where I think what I want to talk about tonight, and where I want to go with this, is the current events. And that's, I believe, to give edification to those that are listening that maybe never heard me before, that are new to the, that may be new to my information. You know, I've been after him for 28 years as a federal whistleblower. I married into the Bush crime syndicate. I married the daughter of one of the Council of 13, the Illuminati bankers, not knowing it. Had a kid. She tried to murder our daughter when she was an infant. Within a year, they terminated my parental rights where they bought her way out of it. And I haven't seen my kids since. And they did a second divorce 10 years later where I wasn't even aware of. Frauds upon the court where they said I gave her up for life with a lifetime restraining order and a sealed case saying that I took $1.5 million to give up my kid with a name change. That didn't ever happen. But I'm in court now over attempted murders. Here I am all these years later. Now, I broke a lot of national scandals. I've been involved with what was called Silverado and the Lincoln stuff, helped put Charles Keating in jail. Almost got a Neil Bush in jail, but nobody had ever indicted him because of the cover-up. But that was a congressional investigation, the Keating 5, which was the MDC 200. Then, of course, the Denver airport and all of its land fraud and all the construction fraud and the secret underground. The HUD scandal of 1989 that gave me the federal whistleblower status, the independent prosecutor being appointed. With that said, I've been after him ever since. And it made me a political prisoner where I, you know, was thrown in jail with 200 or 2,000 Iran-Contra players and 500 federal agents that were trying to bust many of the same people they were in jail with. So, and it all came back to my ex-in-laws were partners with Daddy Bush, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Meyer Rothschild, the Queen of England, Lawrence Rockefeller, Anwar Ben Shari of Israel, and this current Pope Benedict. And these are the part of the what they call the J-12, the Illuminati bankers. Over the years, I've come to know Area 51 scientists who worked with the fallen angels. I've come to know many, many people in the intelligence community and high up in government, as well as being thrown in prison with many people that were heavyweights in shadow government, should we say, for the Bush crime syndicate, where they were using military, they were using intelligence officers and others to do guns, drugs, financial frauds of every kind. But it happens to be that the center of the money laundering was always Denver, Colorado, my ex-in-laws. They've been involved in every major scandal that there is, everything from savings loan, junk bond, daisy chain, to all these other frauds I just mentioned, to the current bank bailout, to the financial frauds involving the derivatives, where they've created $100 trillion worth of mortgages on houses that never existed, and then they turn around and derivatized it through banks worldwide using mainly Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank and others to derivatize them up to $1,500 trillion. And since the bank bailout, which they were supposed to go to bankruptcy court, never did because of this obstruction of justice with all these administrations they've had, they have stolen 10.5 million houses from people that were legitimately paying their mortgages through this artificial MERS that they created, saying that they own the houses because they're sitting there with an artificial mortgage. Somebody's paying their mortgage down the street to XYZ mortgage company, and it happens to be that they're coming in saying they own it, so they're stealing people's houses back. These are the same people that today are behind, and I reported in 1999, and on the front of my website, you can go look, I reported on the school shootings. I had a source inside East Systems of Dallas, Texas, where they're operating the MK-Ultra mind control shelf military that they got chipped while they were in the military, and they're setting them off with computer chips and satellites and phrases that they call them up and set them off, and that they go into the MK Ultra. They, you know, if you've ever seen the movie The Manchurian Candidate, it's all real. I have a videotape I made in 1999, and in that videotape, it specifically gets into the details where I went to the FBI and reported every shooting after the first one, which was a Jewish community center. The first one I reported to them was the Fort Worth shooting of the school down there. I told them 3 or 4 days in advance it was going to happen, and it happened. And I went back to them, they called me up, and I gave them the next one that was going to go down because I was getting inside information. Now, this was all real. After the third time, they didn't want to hear from me anymore. So I was on the radio blowing this out. I'm aware of these school shootings, what's going on currently today. And there's a pattern here, the same garbage going on, except what they've done in the past decade is they've sat down many of these kids because they were drug addicts or whatever their problem may be, or maybe they had problems in school or at home, and so they sent them to the local shrink. Well, that local shrink, community shrink, many of them have been put in place by the crime syndicate to be part of the DARPA program. They were funded, just like the school shooter in Aurora. This current one, his mother worked for DARPA. We just reported on it last night. It's on the front of my website, and it gets into MK Ultra mind control victims. And what's interesting behind this is this gal, she, the mother of the school shooting in Newtown, she was a Defense Research Projects Agency in DARPA, and she worked for the Department of Homeland Security. So this was her own son that she exposed him to and allow him to be part of the psychops game, which many people have done that work in the intelligence community. They pay them handsomely to do this to their own kids, and they're stupid enough to do it for money, and they've done it. And we've got a lot more killings going to happen because what they're after is the guns. And there's a pattern here with this of Fran Townsend, who has been an old stooge of the Bush crime syndicate since Hillary Clinton days. She's a lesbian, insane lesbian in the closet. Every time she's supposedly a CNN national security correspondent, of which she is not, she gets on CNN. But she actually works for Department of Homeland Security and the CIA as a Bush crime family syndicate stooge. And when she goes up there and appears within 2-3 days, you've got massive shootings and killings all across the U.S. Well, I made a page on her, and I put some of the old postings on the patterns I've been watching as she comes on CNN. So in that, you might want to click on that link, Fran Townsend, CNN, Bush crime family stooge, it's dated today, and you might want to get into that link because not only do we have the psychops, which is involving this latest shooting, so psychops, black ops, and ripoffs, and it gives the details, but I've also got the other shooters, the other killings that have happened since that, which people may not be aware of. First, we have Oregon, then we have Newtown, and since all the kids got killed, we had two police officers who killed MK Ultra type yesterday in Topeka, Kansas, down today in San Antonio, or last night in San Antonio, Texas, at a theater, another event occurred. So we've got a pattern here, and there's ties to this, to what's called the Dark Knight movie. Who's got all the noise going on in the background here? Dark Knight movie and on and they're on satanic ley lines, what they call ley lines, L-E-Y lines. It's to do with Satanism. And these shootings are happening on satanic holidays. I've noticed a pattern here. I don't know whether the past few have been. I have not looked at the satanic chart to find out. But we've got one of the largest satanic holidays coming up on June the 22nd. Yeah, they call it the witching hour on the morning of the 22nd from midnight to 3:30 a.m. That the Bushes and this whole cabal will be in Denver, Colorado doing their satanic worship. And this
is that
was kind of like over the years I thought it was the Cherokee, the Kimball Castle, but it actually is downtown. Yeah, downtown Colorado at the old Navari. I got it confirmed this past year. It was kind of like it had gone on at the castle for a few years in the past. and I did not know that they have been doing for the past 20, 25 years, downtown Denver across from the Brown Palace Hotel at the Old Navari. It's an old whorehouse slash casino in downtown Denver, Colorado. They've Leonard Millman, my ex-in-law, had his Waymark Foundation set up in there, and Ann Schultz has his Ann Schultz Foundation as well. It's they claim to be a museum that's not registered, art museum. It is not even on the registry. But they, it's interesting to see the background of this place as far as the history of it. But I've got a lot of information under Bush Satanic Worship. It's on the front of my site as well. In the past few days, I've posted that. You can just go down by date and start looking for it. I've actually got it, I believe, in the top foot of my website about the Bush Crime Syndicate or Satanic Worship. But that we've got this holiday, the Satanic Holiday. And this is the one everybody's been saying, you know, the end of the world is going to come and all these events are going to take place on December the 22nd.
Oh, 22nd.
And as a result of this, if you want to be interviewed here at PJ, I'll let you take over and I'll just sit back.
No,
okay.
No.
Anyway, on December the 22nd is the holiday, and so they'll be appearing on the night of the 21st about 9 p.m. downtown Denver. But the point is this holiday, for some reason, is one of the biggest that there is and ever has been, from what I can tell. There's all kinds of things pertaining to astrology that all these astrologers are out here claiming that we're having all this. We're having a planetary alignment where we're having all these other things that they're claiming into the astrology stuff, which I'm not into, are claiming are happening on this holiday that have never happened before. And, you know, I have a source inside of one of the agencies, intelligence agencies, that deals with the super collider over in Switzerland, saying that they cannot see past December the 22nd. That all the planets line up in a big cross. Well, we are going through a planetary alignment. I've seen some things out here on the internet claiming that they're already starting to see a rotation of a couple of these planets, like they're rotating out of orbit as far as turning upside down, going into almost into a 45 to 50 degree angle at the current time. So we've got a lot of problems, and we're going to have a lot of tug and pull from this on this planet as we approach the weekend. And there's already sign. There's a volcano that popped here in the past 24 hours over in Russia. Russia TV has it up there, RT.com. Other things are happening, beginning to happen. So this to them, to the Satanists, these Council of 13 that control this 90 to 95% economy, this is like maybe usher in their Antichrist, New World Order, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about LIBOR.
Yes.
In other words, we understand that Holmes and Lanza, both of the fathers, were slated to testify, or is that a red herring?
Well, that's what they're claiming on Examiner, and that's what some others have claimed, and a couple videos are floating around out there, but that is not what the extent of this shooting was, and that's not really, I don't believe, what it's about. It's to deal with DARPA, and it's to deal with the fact that these parents... you know, they may be New World Order pigs, these parents. That is a low level of a New World Order pig. But the deal is that these parents are selling their own kids for money. Many people I know that back in the late 40s and 50s, they actually, you know, they had programs. CIO, we can, you know, make the super child for you. Let's inject your child with two strains of DNA from, you know, the fallen angels, you know, that are mating with this tribe down in Spain. Let's inject this blood while it's in the womb of your wife, and we'll buy your house for you. We'll give you this $20,000 you need to pay off your mortgage at the time. These kind of programs went on. They've gone on for years, and the government spends a lot of money in its research in this. I know that many of these kids had drug problems. Many of them, they may be that... The mother in this particular case, she was tied to DARPA. That's the key to this mind control and the brainwashing that's setting them off. And they sit them down in the chair and they chip them.
I'm sorry. It looks pretty legitimate that Peter Lanza, the father of the Connecticut shooter, has, in fact, he was the tax director and vice president for GE. that looks pretty legitimate to me. So,
there's a lot of things floating out there, and yes, from all indications are that he is, and it's showing up all over the internet. I saw it myself, but I don't think that has to do with the two of them testifying, with the fact that their kids are out there shooting. It's tied to DARPA. Okay, in the report that we just put out, it says it's not going to be reported that Nancy Champion Lanza, the mother of the alleged Connecticut shooter, Adam Lanza, was a CIA P2 analysis working for the Defense Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and also the Department of Homeland Security. DARPA specializes and uses simulated video internet games for the purpose of mind control and staging psychops. Reference, DARPA is also linked to the monitoring and illegal misuse of the internet, website, Facebook, social chat box in sending out graphic and subliminal messaging, not only for mind control, but command and control and order to stage their black ops on U.S. soil. And it goes on deeper into the report. It deals with the mind control. Now, you know, the mother, I don't know what the scene was with the mother or the father of the Aurora shooter. I didn't get too much into it at the time because I had a lot of computer problems and was knocked down, and they were blocking me from my site during that period of time right after I reported that Fran Townsend just hit the air. We're going to have a shooting within a couple days. Something's going to happen, because she was saying Iranians are going to attack American people soon. 2 days later, we got the Aurora shooting. Within 24 hours, I was blown apart as far as my computer and access to the internet and all kinds of things for nearly 6 weeks. So I didn't gather the information at the time on the background of the parents of the Aurora shooting.
But you feel, I feel pretty confident that all of these massacres, and I also understand that the shooting in Portland was a failed attempt, and that's why they proceeded with the massacre at the Connecticut school, Sandy Hook.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to get the guns. Hillary Clinton proposes this, year for the UN to confiscate the guns. They're after the guns because they have to disarm America, which is not going to happen, in order to put us under total tyranny. We're under a state of tyranny now and have been for a number of years. We have, 300 million people in this country. 150 million make less money than 400 men at the very top, the 1%. Now, the cabal billionaires, the Illuminati bankers, the 100 underneath is 13. And we have them making not only more money, they're in control of 95% of the U.S. economy. Now, we have, out of that 300 million, we have 120 million working. 60% of them work for the federal government, state government, local governments, county governments, et cetera. 40% are in the private sector, and they're controlling 95% of the private sector. That only leaves 5% of free enterprise in America. Now, in 1981, that 1% only controlled 20% of our economy. So we're totally backwards, flip-flopped, and upside down. And they've done it through theft, deception, frauds, and frauds. And the theft from the U.S. Treasury continuously through the frauds. And they've robbed us and looted us. They've done it to other countries. They've taken over. They're in control of many countries in Europe. They're in control of 95% of their economies. So what we have is a massive problem.
You mentioned an Israeli at the top. Where does, for example, Netanyahu, it looked like he wanted Obama to do something. Obama refused. But I'm guessing that Barry Sotero, whose mother was tied to the CIA, if you're familiar with the work of, Jerome Corsi, what's your take on that?
I'm not familiar with his work. I don't even know who it is. I know that his father was MI6, his father that was supposedly in Kenya. And Sotero, yes, supposedly was born in Kenya. All indications are indicating that. He applied. I even have a card of his down on the front of my news site, way down towards the bottom someplace. You can see where he was enrolled as a foreign student at a university there in New York. That's a copy of his actual ID card. He applied at the college, I think it was, I'm trying to think of the name of it, out in California, applied for student loans, and he was a foreign student. Occidental. So, I mean, you know, he wasn't legitimately born. We could argue that all day long. Everybody has. It's been all over the press. That isn't the thing. Nobody will bring that up. And the reason they won't even touch the subject is because he worked for Daddy Bush when he left the one in New York and went to work for the CIA. Wasn't physically trained CIA. Most of them are trained through the Marine Corps, a special base in Langley by Marines over there. But he was trained to do other things because he was working on his degree as an attorney. Now, they used him for other things. Daddy Bush had his own little privatized CIA running. As president of the United States, he was working in that group at the time. We do know that. Okay, so the guy, he's been a New World Order groomed pig for a number of years, and that's exactly what he is. Here's where he has a difference. He doesn't believe that Israel, should we say, I won't say this, he was, you could ask yourself a question. The guy ran against Hillary Clinton, then suddenly picks Hillary Clinton before he's even inaugurated for a Secretary of State. He picks the Attorney General,
Holder.
I'm dead tonight, Holder. He picks him for the purpose of cover-up, and Eric Holder was Mark Rich's attorney who got Mark Rich, the presidential pardon through Bill Clinton before he left office. Mark Rich was a Jewish thief. He was a thief, and he was part of the Mossad, Thief in America. Now, what I do have on, and I think if you listen to that Gordon Duff interview that's on the front of my site, and if you scroll down to the link that says AIPAC, A-I-P-A-C, I'm trying to look right now for the date on it. It was a couple of weeks ago. AIPAC, decapitation of top government officials. Well, this AIPAC, the American-Israeli Mossad Pact, my ex-in-law, Melman's stooge, Larry Mizell, and attorney stooge, Norman Brownstein, who was also Daddy Bush's attorney and still is when he was CIA director, are directors of AIPAC. Now, they're using AIPAC as an Israeli front. It's nothing but a spy ring. And they intend on, and here's what has happened. That about 2 months ago, there were 16 different intelligence agencies that came together and made a report and finding on individual findings on the Jonathan Pollard spy ring tied to AIPAC. Pollard's in prison, has been for a number of years, for stealing nuclear codes. They found out the reason they'll never let Pollard out is because a couple hundred CIA people have been killed in this involving the spy ring that Pollard was involved with. It turned out to be that the other members of the spy ring over the course of these years that they've come to the conclusion and put out in this report was Benjamin Netanyahu, my ex-in-law, Leonard Melman, his partner Larry Mizell, Norman Brownstein, the attorney for Daddy Bush, got Daddy Bush named in there, got Jeb Bush, George W. Bush, Neil Bush, and others, including Netanyahu of Israel, the prime minister, that they were involved in not only nuclear secret codes, but in high-level technology, transfer of weapons and chemical weapons without government permission, and many of the other things that I've found over the years, they found in that intelligence report, or put in that intelligence report. Also, their involvement in bringing down the buildings on the day in the attack with Daddy Bush on the buildings of 9/11. So Barack Obama has been told by U.S. generals that there is not going to be a war in Israel. It's not going to happen. You will not do this. We are not going to sustain a war. We are not going to start a war in the Middle East because Netanyahu is lying to you and to the American people and to the rest of the world because he wants to dominate the whole region. We're not going to play the game. He's been espionage against the United States of America. They're also aware that my ex-in-law was walking around, Leonard Melman, and Larry Mizell walking around with Russian diplomatic passport, which means they were Russian Jewish spies. They're all Khazarians out of the old Russian Republic. They are the Russian mob. And so, therefore, they have found that they have used the Israelis, and they have used Netanyahu and the Mossad to do their dirty work, along with Anwar Ben-Sheri of Israel, involving these weapons and the transfer of these weapons and these secrets and getting these roughly 200 CIA personnel killed at various times over the past 20 years. So they're putting a stop to them. So they will not back Israel. They are telling Barack Obama, so he's listening to the generals. Well, this has now got him in a box because they are plotting and planning, and they have picked up on this, that because he's been stooging him, should we say, turning his nose up to Netanyahu a few times when he's been in the U.S. in this past year. This has been going on, apparently, with the U.S. generals for about 1 year, and knowing this information, and that we couldn't sustain the war and wouldn't go to war, and this is the reason he's been thumbing his nose up to him, to Benjamin Netanyahu. Barack Obama has been. Now they've put a hit on Barack Obama. So they're plotting and planning, and they've picked up on this, that they're planning and killing him. Well, that's made Barack Obama think a couple different ways. He's realizing he got stooged over the Benghazi gate scandal and Stevens' killing, and that there's a lot of things Stevens was involved with as being a good guy, that Hillary Clinton set him up to be a patsy. They were actually going to kidnap him, and they ended up killing him instead. It was Mossad. And they're going to use that to trade it off for another Arab, supposedly Al-Qaeda. And it was all...
Can I speak about that, you, Stu? Because my understanding is that Karl Rove was actually the one who had orchestrated the Benghazi attack and the assassination of Ambassador Stevens as a way to make Obama look weak on security, and that's why he had made all of the very confident assurances to the donors, you know, that had spent millions of dollars saying, Karl Rove saying, this is a slam dunk, we're going to make, you know, Obama look weak on security, and that, in fact, it was Karl Rove that had orchestrated the Benghazi attack.
He may have been involved that I'm unaware of in that. I don't know. We got Hillary Clinton tied to it. That's what we do know, that what I know about it. We got Hillary deep into it, deep into the doo-doo. And she went before the Congress, and she lied about it initially. And this is the reason she's doing everything she can to keep from appearing. She's saying she's going to resign as Secretary of State and so on and so forth. And they've been trying to get Rice in there because she's a pathological liar and the whole bit, like Hillary Clinton is. Hillary's a nutcase. She's an insane lesbian and has been insane for many years. But this woman is a killer. She's very dangerous. You know, she blackmailed Barack Obama into getting her position.
And she's involved with it's your ex-wife, is that correct?
My ex-in-laws. My ex-wife wasn't directly involved in any of this stuff ever when I was married to her or that I was ever aware of. She may be in control of some of the assets now, from what I understand, this $30 trillion that Milman reportedly had when he supposedly died. But now we're finding out he's sitting down on the Cuban Isle with Robert Vesco and many other fugitives, faked his death because of the heat I threw on him. But all of his...
You actually have lawsuits, don't you, against the Bushes?
I have an ongoing injunctive relief stating that these things have happened to me and that they've done these things. And I actually had to go for appeal because of Kansas City U.S. District Court judges. There's two sets of judges here. There's one on the Missouri side in the Western District of Missouri, and then there's one on the 10th Judicial, which is Kansas City, Kansas, where I filed the injunctive relief. And I've had to actually appeal because I'm running into all the Bush Clinton-appointed judges, federal judges, and they're all corrupt and crooked. And I've got a lawsuit against them for attempted murder on a rollover, one of four attempts that have been made upon my life, three of them in car accidents, and one in a Blackwater helicopter that was shot down by our military in behalf of me to keep from me being killed. And so those are four attempts that have occurred in almost four years now. And
do you mind
even
telling
burned a customer's house
accident
to the ground?
How was the car accident? I'm curious about how the car accident was orchestrated because I'm the literary agent for Warren Trammell, who's father was a victim of an attempted assassination by the Nixon administration.
Well, they always either suicide the person with gunshots to the head, or else they do them in car accidents where they crash into pillars or whatever. Mine was, I'm going down the road, had some guy on my rear end in a van, and so I got in the middle lane to get rid of him off my tail. He rode me on the right side. We're going down the road another mile and a half, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, here comes a car up on my left side. Then all of a sudden on a three-lane freeway at 65 miles an hour, and I was cruising along about 60, all of a sudden there was a separation between myself and them. They were riding the wall. And all of a sudden, before I'm looking over and I'm seeing them scraping the wall, and I'm thinking, oh, God, what the heck? And all of a sudden, they just jackknifed right off the wall into my left rear, and it just made my vehicle just go completely twisted sideways. And I went in a roll, and all I saw was a concrete barrier coming up my head. And it was my construction van. If it hadn't been for a 2x4 wall that I'd built behind the seats with plywood on it and to keep tools from flying forward, should we say, into my head and so forth, and to keep people out of my quote-unquote toolbox, I would have been dead. You can see the van. It's in you can see it in where it says Stu Webb versus or amended complaint. You can see the police report after I'd rolled three times on a concrete barrier, broke my neck six times. I had to go to a chiropractor for over a year. I'm back at it and been at it for 2 years at a chiropractor after having two more incidents similar to it, except both of them, they found them guilty, ticketed them, where one smacked me in the rear end at 20 miles an hour, and another one hit me in the left side at 65 twice, trying to knock me into a pillar, and it didn't happen. So they ticketed him, but I've never been paid a dime. The first one, the cops covered it up, would never take a police report from me, etc. Tried to make it look like some magic car theory. They lied in a supplemental report saying it was the first time that I had ever contacted them, etc., and that they couldn't contact me. It's in the complaint. You can read about it. You can see the drawings. You can see the phone records where I intentionally in pictures of the vehicle, and you can tell that the vehicle had hit me twice. One, its right front side. You can see the left side scraped. You can see the tire bent in on the left side where it crawled up on the concrete barrier, which sticks out at the bottom, bent the tire in, the rim in, or the whole housing in when it hit the wall, bounced off the wall to get me. And then you can see the second one, a picture that I picked up later from a helicopter, a news helicopter that was flying over, showing the position of the vehicles and crammed into me with the left fronts. And you can see across the scrapes across the front of the bumper, that was my bumper scraping their bumper when they jammed me the first time at 65 miles an hour as they shot off the wall. But it's pretty obvious what they did.
What happened to the people in the other? I mean, did they leave the scene or what happened?
No, they were never ticketed. Matter of fact, they screwed up and they had multiple IDs, and they were dumb enough to give them one of the fake ID insurance companies that had the same initials, same birth date, different name on the same vehicle. And I put that, of course, in the complaint, that one, but I have the other one that was in their name or his name, but they had multiple IDs. They're working for the government. They're Somalians with even passports and multiple IDs. And I can prove it. I can prove the FBI in Houston was behind it. And the broad in FBI, Carol Davis, she has been fired and was fired from the FBI several months back for illegal activities that she was involved with, which she actually was arrested over it, and the whole bit. The government's still trying to cover up for her here on this attempted murder instead of letting it fall. I've got a U.S. attorney's defending her. I've got the U.S. attorney's defending a former U.S. attorney defending my ex-in-laws who was part of the crime syndicate. So all I've got is a bunch of former U.S. attorneys, current U.S. attorneys, and obstruction of justice judges down here playing games with me.
What kind of precautions are you taking for your safety?
I walk around with a .45 with black hollow points. If anybody wants a piece of my action, come on.
That's right. Love it.
Hey, Stu, this is Vince. I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with the offshore gas? I know that it extends from Turkey to Palestine. I don't know if Libya was involved in that gas build. It takes up Eastern Mediterranean.
I don't know about that gas field that you're speaking of, no. I don't know about it.
The
I know that whole Middle East, that whole region's full of oil and gas.
Well, the other area we're looking at is the DR Congo, because it looks like that's where the guns from Benghazi were going down to the Congo. But yeah, I suspect that what's going on in the Middle East was essentially a flashpoint diversion away from what they're planning. Essentially, the Congo is related to they call rare earth minerals but there's all these different areas where they're engaged and keeping things busy, and you know, if we weren't talking to each other about what's going on out there, the only reports that I got all weekend was about what happened in Connecticut. It was like there wasn't anything else that had to be reported in the news all weekend.
Well, if you go onto my site and click on that one link, Brand Townsend, you'll see that there's been two other shootings that I have not seen reported on the national news whatsoever. The one in Topeka, Kansas, two cops killed by Fruitcake, another MK Ultra, and then the other one, of course, in San Antonio at another theater. They're going to be setting them off. But in the bigger picture, this is all about gun grab. It's about martial law. And there's many reasons why. You have the Reagan-Mitterrand Protocol. I've reported on it continuously. I've known Leo Wanta since 1979. Have been indirectly involved, should we say, in reporting with Tom Hennigan since about 2004, heavily on his activity. And it deals with Reagan envisioned when he was president, had given up $2 trillion, I think it was, or $4 trillion, U.S. taxpayers' money. And his whole story's up on the front of my site. You can see a picture of it. It says by Marilyn McGruger Barnwall. It says the Global News and Views, Leo Wanta Bio. And you can see all the details, what his commission was. He's releasing his book. It's been approved by the CIA to release this information. It was approved back about a year ago. She's been writing a book. It's free of charge. You can download each chapter. They've released about three or four different chapters. One of them will be on Silverado, which my ex-in-laws own Silverado, where Neil Bush was director as well. That's going to be in one of the future chapters. It's supposed to all be released by the end of the year, these chapters, or the first part of the year, within the first a couple of weeks in January. Now,
what's the name of the book
Leo,
again?
It's called Americans Want to Be Free. And it's right on my website. There's a banner that says Veterans Today on the top, towards the top of my website on StuWeb, StuWBB.com. It says Americans Want to Be Free. You can go read about Leo, okay? She's putting the information out right now. It's his writer. Now, Leo's commission was to break the Russian ruble, and there were several countries that kicked in on it, and it was France, Britain, the United States, China, and Germany had kicked in on this money, and they raised $4.5 trillion in assets, gold, other things the countries had, as well as actual cash. And what he did was able to manipulate the Russian ruble and break the Russian ruble, which broke the Russian regime, should we say, at the time, broke them up and was very successful underneath Ronald Reagan that brought down the Berlin Wall. Well, Wanta's other commission was to break the Federal Reserve in America. Break it, stranglehold, break it, period. Get rid of the Federal Reserve. Leo was probably one of the 007's counterintelligence type operatives that we've had over the years. And so that was his commission to do. He had people underneath him working with him. Gordon Duff is the editor of USA, one of the senior editors of Veterans Today. He stated in the interview he works with Leo Wanta. There's many people that were involved in this operation over the years. And even though they didn't meet directly with Reagan, Wanta did, because he was in charge of the operations of the Treasury, Counterintelligence, NSA, CIA agent, Defense Intelligence agent, etc. He was to break the Federal Reserve. That didn't happen. The reason it didn't happen, was because when Daddy Bush became president of the United States, he's like already robbing and looting the country so bad underneath and behind the scenes that Reagan did not even know. Nobody knew the truth about it. I think that you can hear that Gordon Duff interview where he gives me credit that they've been watching me for the past 10 years of my activities of exposing. And as a result, that led to the connections in with this huge spy ring involving Netanyahu and Melvin and others that were really never on their radar scope that goes back to Daddy Bush. So I thank them for giving me credit finally, and people have come out about that, of the noise that I've made and the things that I've exposed. But the point is with Leo and that whole crowd is that they have been active continuously. Leo was thrown in a dungeon. Daddy Bush stole the $4.5 trillion, which at the time had already gone up to about $7 or $8 trillion with the interest. And he stole the money, started moving all around the world. They followed the money as best as they can. They've already taken back now through a Supreme Court order with Nancy Reagan being involved and testifying to what her husband had done with Leo. And others, and this all went down a few months back. They were able to wrestle control of this trust, the Ameritrust, which the Treasury Secretary was on, Geithner, whoever the Treasury Secretary would be on it, was taken off of it, et cetera. Barack Obama, when he became president, signed the executive order to return the money immediately, and then he turns around and figures out that, whoa, Daddy Bush is saying, no, you aren't going to take my money. He thinks it's his money. Well, this $4.5 trillion is over $27 trillion now, and they're trying to get the rest of the money. They've already confiscated and have in cash $1.7 trillion in a Virginia bank right now of money in accounts. And this money is to be returned to the U.S. Treasury. And part of the money is to be used for various purposes. One is to build a high-speed rail system in America. Leo Wanta is trying to pay he will have to pay $1.5 trillion of taxes on that account of the accounts of the America Trust. Anything that's made, they have to pay tax on it. Corporations set up and designed for intelligence operations, etc. They want to pay that tax. And right now, Barack Obama and the others don't want them to pay because they want, quote unquote, they don't want the American people, because of the control of the Federal Reserve, they don't want the American people to even know what the hell is going on. Because the Federal Reserve, this basically puts them out of business once this money's returned. Now, if you notice, we've also posted about Deutsche Bank. And Hennigan posted up on Sunday last week. On Wednesday, Deutsche Bank was raided. He said, eyes over Deutsche Bank. The following Wednesday, I guess it was, Deutsche Bank got raided by 500 federal agents, Interpol agents, and police over in Germany. And they confiscated part of the Reagan-Mitterrand money that was in bank accounts there. They had warrants for five individuals at Deutsche Bank. They took several into custody besides the five, and they're being held, and they're going to be charged with many things. But it deals with this derivatives. And these are what my ex-in-laws were selling. They had faked these mortgages on houses they didn't build. They duplicated them on other people's houses that they were buying mortgages all across the nation, then selling them in blocks, and then derivatizing them. And it deals with that. So what they have in America is, say, Bank of America. 8 out of 10 of the mortgages that they hold, they're calling them non-performing assets. They are not paying anything, but they're sitting there cooking their books to make it look like they have legitimate mortgages. Now, you have the Federal Reserve on the other side that are their partner in the crime, saying that 2-3 months ago in September, that they, after I did a filing in federal court in Kansas City, stating that they were going to start buying up $40 billion a month worth of mortgages to stimulate the economy. They aren't buying up any mortgages to stimulate the economy. They're buying up this bad mortgages to get them off their paper at their banks because their banks are cooking their books, and federal regulators should shut them down immediately because they have no assets to back up the stock that they're selling over the exchange. All this is coming to a head, and it's coming to a head right now. That's the reason you can hear, in a moment, you can hear this physical cliff thing that they have been pushing about the taxation, physical cliff. It has nothing to do with them falling off a physical cliff, and it has to do with good versus bad right now. It happens to deal with this Reagan Rand-Iran protocol operation and money, and this is going to be returned, they're hoping, by the end of the year, forcing it into the U.S. Treasury within a couple weeks after the first of the year. So they're doing everything they can to stop it, because this will put an end to the Federal Reserve in America.
Awesome.
So it's good that money's going to be returned, you say?
They've already got $1.7 trillion of it, and if you've noticed, Daddy Bush had a heart bumper, should we say. They claim he had bronchitis and was in the hospital. Sure. That wasn't the truth. He had a heart bumper. And then Hillary Clinton got, should we say, she might have ate some bad duck, maybe at some restaurant. And she got a problem where she was sitting on the toilet for too long. And then all of a sudden she got a pass-out job and got a concussion from it. Well, I'd say the word is capitulation. Give up the bank accounts.
Yeah,
right.
before you die, you know, in your crimes, let me ask you about the BRICS.
The Brits?
BRICS. No, B-R-I-C-S. The BRIC countries.
The British countries? Or BRIC?
No,
what do you mean by BRIC countries?
The Brazil, Russia, India, China. The gold, the countries that are gathering up gold. Venezuela is one of the countries that's gathering up gold, turning in their certificates to bring gold back. Right before the hurricane hit the East Coast, you know, the term is announced that most of, you know, that they had a large stash of gold in Manhattan, lower Manhattan. There was some question about whether that gold would end up underwater, which is, you know, doesn't even matter. But so I want to know.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that end of it, but I know that Christine Lagarde of the International Monetary Fund is working hand in hand with Leo Wanta and working hand in hand with others inside Interpol and U.S. intelligence, including the Provost Marshal and the U.S. Mainly the Provost Marshal military. Working with them and the U.S. Inspector General to ensure that this money's returned to us, but France has already gotten their money back. And France actually bailed out Spain and bailed out Greece with the money, with an agreement, with an agreement. And you, if you remember, you were seeing all over the news, Spain and Greece is going to cause this problem 3 months ago. You don't see a damn word about it on the news now.
You're
it's
right.
Because they didn't need EU, European Central Bank, ECB, which is the same thing as the Federal Reserve here, owned by the same people, the Council of 13. They didn't need that bailout. The agreement was, we will bail you out through the IMF. France will loan you the money through the IMF on one condition. January 1, you write off your derivative debt, bankrupt on it, and start your new banks over.
Wow.
That's heavy.
You're going to see France and Greece make an announcement after the first of the year, what they did. They're telling the U.S. banks, that is the Federal Reserve boys, the European Central Bank boys, go to hell, you sold us a bunch of junk paper that's worthless, and we're not going to continue paying you on this junk paper. Take it away. We owe you nothing. You sold us junk. You put us in debt. You nearly bankrupted us.
Well,
so
see,
we're going to see a lot of things,
this,
just like Iceland or Greenland or whatever it was, what they did with their bankers up there and started jailing right. them. I think you might see some interesting things go down here, you know, in the next few months.
It's already happening. They are starting to jail, you know, through this LIBOR scandals, and people have already been jailed. They won't release the names, though.
I know there's a few that have been. But you also have to remember, folks, not to listen to the Drake the Fake, Benjamin Fulford, the scams of British intelligence that we're the ones Christopher Story that had World Reports, that is Edward Harrell still alive today, faked his death, lives in Canada. Don't listen to any of this garbage. The Denard, the Nasara, Global Settlements, none of it's real. It's all a scam. They scammed a lot of people. I'm hearing they got $30 to $40 million out of people worldwide that were dumb enough to invest in it, thinking they were investing into something legitimately. Who they targeted specifically were Christian ministers throughout the world, mainly in the United States of America, that were dumb enough to invest and knew nothing about investments, dumb enough to put their money in it. Oh, the Lord promised us that in the end times, that after they stole and looted and robbed us, that he would give us back many, many times. They're using some scripture out there to play their game to rip everybody off. If you go to my website and click on Stu Webb Versus, because I had one of those punks call me, start getting a bunch of his people on his message board up on Facebook to hound on me one afternoon with numerous harassing calls. I brought charges against him. But you might look, it says Drake the Fake, also known as Hillary McLaughlin. Okay, that's where the phone number, there's his phone number if you want to get your money back. But in there, in that link, if you click on it, you can see that Nasara is a scam. U.S. prosecutors and the FBI have been prosecuting and have prosecuted up to $30 million worth of frauds already involving these people. It was British intelligence that was involved with the Queen of England in order to stop Leo Wanta from doing what he was doing, working with Daddy Bush, and there's scamsters working with Daddy Bush as well, involved in this. And the way they always run an operation is they steal from the people to run their operations. And that's what they were doing. Go in and look for yourself. So if you got scammed and you invested in the Denard or you invested in the Nasara program, go in to the link, says Stu Webb versus Milliman Crime Syndicate. Go down where it says threats by Hillary McLaughlin, Drake the Fake, and go in and click on that. Go inside that link. There's two other links talking about the Nasara being an idea, never implemented, and now how Nasara is a scam. And go to those two websites and look at the links by U.S. attorneys. They're right there in the right column where they have already prosecuted them. And if anybody else has been a victim, contact this United States Attorney's Office. We'll be happy to bring additional charges. So if you've been screwed and conned, quit listening. Drake the Fake, Drake Bailey, working for U.S. Intelligence, the U.S. Army, and Benjamin Fulford. Quit listening to these little phonies and fakes and get yourself out there to the U.S. Attorney's Office or on the phone and get your money back. They'll prosecute them, lock them up, and get part of your money back for you. And they're following behind Leo Wanta, making people think that when the money changes, they're going to get paid. They're going to get paid. When the money changes, the money's ready to change. It's getting ready to happen. It's already in the process, but you aren't going to get any of it, folks. You will never get your money back.
Yeah, a lot of people...
I wanted to ask you about the there's a kid out of St. Louis that I call him a kid, but he's been tracking the weather modification, and I wanted to ask you how the gas explosions that are happening all over the country, is this tied to MK Ultra? You can do a lot of damage.
I don't have any idea. I had a question to know it all.
What's that?
Pardon me?
The fracking industry, how it ties in with Halliburton. Sounds like we're coming up to the end of the show. I thank you, Stu, and I thank you, Lisa and TJ.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. And I remember, we got a satanic worship in Denver on the 21st at 9 p.m. across from the Brown Palace. Citizens arrest. It's time to shut them down.
Shut them down and out them. God bless America.
Thanks, Stu.
Okay, good night, everybody. Both Monday shows, Socialist Insight and the Ohana Times Compass, we'll be back on January 7th. The next two Mondays are New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve, so we'll not be on the air. And once again, the opinions expressed on our shows are not necessarily those of all members of the station.
Thank you, Roseanne.
Bye-bye. Have a good Monday. Bye, Vinny.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Right.